Okay.
Welcome to the MacGuffin. I'm Alex, and with me, as usual, is James. You just missed a great intro that didn't record properly, so here's a boring one. Check out our website, themacguffin.com. We most recently talked about War Machine, where we broke down some production logos with film criticism. So if that's your type of thing, you can listen to that. Before that was 3 Days of the Condor, and before that, Out of Sight. I've also written a bunch of things recently about Master of None, Lost City of Zed, and James Gray. And I will be writing something about Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt in the next couple days. Anyway, you can check those out. Follow us on Twitter, at the MacGuffman, and tell your friends. All right, theme song.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. And now, here are Alex and James.
James.
Alex.
We made it through the theme song once again. Always the most trying portion of our podcast for us.
Yep.
Yeah. So what are we talking about here today?
We are talking about Colossal.
Yes.
And my first question for you is, have we broken our connection of movies that are somewhat tangentially related to each other?
Interesting question. I'll come up with something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we were talking about Colossal today. Mm-hmm. A movie I think you saw last year, right?
Yeah, I saw it at TIFF, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I'm better than everybody.
That's right.
yeah, I saw it at TIFF and liked it quite a bit. I mean, I'm not proud to admit that I fell asleep through part of it, but that was also because it's on like day 8 of staying up till 3 a.m. and then waking up at 8 a.m. to go see movies, so... So I missed five minutes or so then, but it was a great experience nonetheless.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you did enjoy this a lot, eh?
Oh, yeah. It's a very enjoyable movie, and it's especially enjoyable to see with a room full of people, which is part of the reason why I'm upset at the lack of distribution for this movie.
Right. This didn't make a big splash, did it?
No, which is so weird to me. And, like... I just feel like this movie could have made money. I'm not crazy for thinking that, right?
It's not that I think it's a bad movie, but I doubt that even with a big push, it would have done very well.
I'm not saying it's a hit, but it's something that should have been available for you to see in your town outside of a metropolis, you know? Like,
yeah.
The fact that this movie only played in major cities is very upsetting to me.
Okay.
Because it's just another nail in the coffin of the death of cinema and going to the cinema mattering, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those... I mean, what I'll say about it is that it's kind of just a cool little movie that tried something, right?
Yep, absolutely. But it's also like an entertaining genre movie, you know?
What genre?
Oh, it's got monsters. It's got like a nice little coming home comedy. It's a bunch of different genres. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know where you want to start with this, but since you said it's a coming home comedy, it's a monster movie. It's sort of a not coming of age, like 17-year-old, but kind of like a 27-year-old coming of age. Like, you can you've been an adult for a bit. You know, I'm speaking for mostly for Gloria, but I guess this would apply to Oscar. You've been an adult for a bit, and you kind of reach a point where you've gone through a cycle a few times, it seems, for Gloria. And it's whether the adulthood she's experienced for the last few years is the adulthood she wants to experience for the rest of her life, or if there's a bit more to growing up than, you know, becoming legal drinking age and really leaning into that ability to drink.
Yeah. I like how your adulthood is legal drinking age and not turning 18.
It's close enough.
I mean, in America, it's 3 years difference, but.
Right.
This movie is a melding of a variety of different things. And you can see parts of other movies. You can see parts of other movies that people that star in this movie have starred in, or I guess played supporting parts in. But and
as Rachel getting married?
Yeah, there's elements of Rachel getting married and a little bit of drinking buddies as well, which Jason Sudeikis has a small role in. But yeah, it's, I don't know, it just sort of, it comes together to form something that is newer-ish, you know, and yeah. interesting in a way that that I think is fun to think about.
Yeah, I mean, the monster element is obviously important to the plot, and I imagine the marketing, if this movie were ever to have been marketed in any meaningful way, at least. It's present, but it's more of a tool than it is the majority of the movie. I mean, we do see destruction, but we're not really going through the progression of a monster movie typically, right?
No. Yeah. And yeah, we are not going through the progression of the monster movie at all, because there's no setup of like a child talking about their divorced parents that may or may not get to be back together due to this this pending monster attack. You know, it doesn't have the beats of a monster movie at all. It just sort of keeps the monster fighting aspects, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But like, the beats leading up to those are totally different.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. It's more of a typical, sort of small indie feeling dramedy plus some Godzilla like monster scenes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what is it that you like so much about it? Is it the blending of the genres, or where does your appreciation come from for the most part?
I mean, primarily it's a very entertaining film. That's numero uno. But also I really enjoy what the movie says about anonymity and the difference between doing something that the results of your action you can't see versus seeing what you're doing right in front of you. I enjoy the way the movie comments on that, and I think there's just a lot of there's at least a few examples of small moments in this movie that I think comment on modern society in a way that I find very interesting, like the when Gloria wakes up and learns about the monster attacks and calls her ex-boyfriend Tim. I believe his name's Tim. And
it is.
Yeah, okay. And she's just like freaking out. I think I'm having a panic attack. There's a monster attack in Korea. And he says something along the lines of like, are you just hearing about this now? This is 9 hours ago. And he's like very chill about this. This is like a monster attacking part of the world, you know? And I think that moment is a nice comment on how quickly we move past things, and also how much less frightening something is just because you're watching it through a screen.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that it is a monster attacking soul, you know?
And obviously it is a big event, but for something to happen on almost the exact other side of the world and you hearing about it 9 hours later, you know, when you've been sleeping, that still is a long time now, you know what I mean? And that certainly wouldn't have been the case even 20 years ago.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. But you also wouldn't have heard about it immediately 20 years ago too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. anonymity wasn't one of the themes I really took away from it, but I guess it's that idea of responsibility that I took in. And yeah, you're right. It's her being unaware of it for the meantime is what you mean by it's commenting on anonymity?
No, I mean that more from Oscar's perspective, I guess, is the easier way to sort of look at it, in that he's not really confronted with the damage that he's doing because he's doing it to people on the other side of the world, right? So he just seems to have an easier time just killing people because he never sees those people, right? Whereas you sort of feel like if Oscar were to, even though he does physically attack Gloria a couple points in this movie, you kind of feel like he wouldn't just murder people.
Yeah,
you know,
he would take down skyscrapers knowing there's thousands of people in it.
Exactly. Like, he doesn't seem like you know, he doesn't seem like the Joker who's just trying to kill people to have killed people, you know? He just seems like somebody that is trying to gain some sort of like weird self-built upper hand over Gloria, and to do that he's just sort of showing how powerful he can be, but he doesn't realize how negatively he is affecting the other side of the world, you know? Or even he does realize it, but again, it's that that distance between his actions and the results of those actions that sort of allow him to remain, I guess, emotionally distant and physically distant.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a cool role for Jason Sudeikis. I mean, there's a lot of good people in this movie, really. There's not a lot of characters in this movie, so there's it's sort of important that everybody does their job well. Mm-hmm. And we see Jason Sudeikis as that, you know, just kind of lovable jokester. And it's unsettling, I'll say, to watch the darker side of him kind of reveal itself as this movie progresses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and especially that like fireworks scene in the bar. It's just like, this is so uncomfortable. And I mean, people are literally walking out of the bar because they can't deal to be around it. But yeah, that's one of the scenes where I think Sudeikis is most impressive. Yeah.
Yeah, and he still kind of maintains everything we know about him, you know, still pretty affable and silly, but it's such a serious thing that he's doing, and it's such a serious statement that he's making. You know, he's saying that this is the most irresponsible thing he could do in this bar, right? Mm-hmm. And by the time the scene is done, he's kind of revealed that he believes Gloria will stick with him even after doing the most irresponsible thing. And it points to at least his interpretation of Gloria at the time, and I don't think it's a far-fetched one, is that she'll stick with him, not despite him being irresponsible, but because of him being irresponsible. And the idea of her having to be responsible all the time is sort of what she's running away from. So to see him do this very frightening thing, and for that to be the less frightening option than pushing yourself to be a responsible adult is, you know, as I said, it's pretty unsettling.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Does that line up with your kind of larger interpretation of what this movie's about?
About her running from responsibility, but then also having to be responsible simultaneously?
Yeah, I mean, just this, as we said, we've got this monster here who, it's not a big part of the plot. You know, we're not looking at it like a monster movie where we've got to figure out, you know, it's how to take it down in the traditional way that most movies like this would deal with that. So it strikes me that it would just be a gigantic allegory. And I just didn't know what you thought is below the surface of, you know, her realizing her power as this monster on the other side of the world.
Yeah, I guess the I don't know. I guess I approach the monster side of things more from Oscar's perspective, and that I just sort of view Oscar as the angry guy on the internet sort of thing. And that's something that I find a lot running throughout this movie, is that I assume all of those people are also, you know, like real people, you know, whoever's writing racist YouTube comments or whatever, whoever these people are, who I don't think I know, but who knows. But just sort of the way that the movie establishes him as a human and gives him reasons to be upset, but there's also a sort of entitlement, a feeling of entitlement that runs throughout Oscar. Like, he kind of feels like the world should have treated him better, and you never quite get to the bottom of him as a character, but you do see at least reasons for this real bubbling anger. You know, you don't really get the reason for it as the child version of Oscar, but we see it for the adult version for sure.
Like his parents dying and
the woman that he moved in with, and the child them leaving.
Yeah.
Those things specifically. So you kind of see this is something that you could totally understand somebody being like mad at the world for these things happening, right? But also just to not be able to bounce back and just sort of take out that anger on other people that you cannot see. And I think the fact that Anne Hathaway's in this movie makes it interesting, because she's somebody that the internet basically despises. For like, no, I've never totally understood why, because I think she's talented. I think she's very likable. I think it's just sort of the overachieving drama kid. I think that's why people hate her, because that's pretty clearly the type of person that she is.
Yeah, and you're right. She never had that public meltdown, like, you know, a tape of her abusing her child or something that never came out, right?
Exactly. And like the biggest scandal in her life was that she was, I think she was engaged to somebody that ended up being like a scam artist. I think his name was Raphael Fileri or something like that. And like that was it's a horrible thing to have to go through. But even like her public responses to it were all like so entertaining. And I mean, it's been years since this happened, but like the way she took it in stride was so wonderful. But still, people decided, let's beat her up for this. Like it's just crazy to me. But I think the placement of Anne Hathaway just makes it even more interesting because she is somebody that I just sort of feel a strong distaste for on the internet whenever. Whenever the opportunity for that topic comes up, it's not hard to find people hating on Anne Hathaway. You know?
Yeah. I think you've looked at it through a lot more modern and technological lens than I was looking at it. But yeah. I think that does add a dimension to it, especially with Anne Hathaway that I hadn't appreciated.
Yeah, for sure. And I just sort of think you know, the difference between, I don't know, something happening in the room and something happening in a room that you will never see. I just, that's the thing that I felt running through the movie, you know, because all the alcoholism stuff is good, but it's just sort of more, more on the nose and easier to see, you know? And I just sort of found myself, after having seen this movie for the first time, sort of like thinking about it some more as I was leaving the theater, and I was like, couldn't really figure out why, and that was sort of what I came to as the like the thing that I think is modern and interesting about this movie is how it comments on modern technology, basically.
Yeah,
and the way we use it, the way humans interact with it.
Yeah, and I think with that, there's a little shot that I like of her of Gloria watching the monster on TV, and it's that shot from behind her, you see her back, and then her shoulders are lined up perfectly with the monster's shoulders, so yeah. That when it raises its arms, it looks like she's raising hers. That was just a shot that I enjoyed, and it lines up with what you were saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think the way that, you know, there again, another little thing that I really like about this movie is how Gloria is describing how she lost her job on the bench to Oscar, and what she says is that, you know, she doesn't go into detail, but what she says is that she basically wrote something that was taken as offensive. She just wrote a play on words, and she didn't get fired for it immediately. But the second the downsizing happened, she was the first one to go, right? And just the way that, to quote a movie I like even more than this one, the internet's not written in pencil, it's written in pen. And how what people write on the internet actually has some power to affect both people you don't see and also you eventually, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, also watching it this week has been really interesting because, I mean, we're recording this almost a week after the Bill Maher controversy, which has been fascinating to me, and how little it seems to have been covered, I think, because it happened on a Friday night, and people just, like, were like, yeah, it's the weekend, we'll let him off, you know? Like, it's just crazy. So I just sort of, I feel like that's sort of all the contradictions that come with the internet and people saying offensive things on the internet, or things that they may not realize are offensive but are harming others. That type of thing is just something that I found interesting in this movie, because the movie never hits on those elements too hard. Those are the things that happen sort of in the shadows, whereas the alcoholism's like right out there. You know?
Yeah. And because you're speaking about technology, what is with everybody going to the bar to watch news?
That doesn't make any sense. That's a thing that has happened in movies for so long. It's just something that people have not found a workaround for. You were like mildly obsessed with this for a while, that watching how movies and television shows figured out how to show texting once texting became, or I guess years after texting became, an integral part of everybody's life, right?
Yeah, it's undeniable to tell a story about teenagers and not show them texting, or really about anybody, right?
Yeah, exactly. Or teenagers initially, and because the first movies you see it are teen movies, right? And then
that wanna be like who pay so much attention to telling to reflecting the world exactly as teenagers see it, even more so than other movies, I would think.
Yeah, yes, for sure, I would agree. But yeah, the people watching the news in the bar, I think it's just another thing that we just haven't figured out how to do, you know?
Because yeah,
how I find out everything that happens, I find out online, you know? And I don't know, maybe there were people in a bar today watching the Comey hearing, but that's an exception. That's not common, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know what you mean, because I think a giant attack like this, it would be something that you would talk to people about. It would be a communal communal event, just because it would perplex and fascinate and interest so many people at the same time. And the language of cinema still tells that as people gathering in a public place, you know, this is not the public square anymore, but it's a pub, to take this all in together, because it is a shared experience. And it's, yeah, they, as you said, they just don't have a way to show that anymore.
Yeah. I will also say that, I think I forget what movie we most recently talked about this, but like Small Town America can sometimes still surprise you in how people react in sort of old fashioned ways. So maybe that's sort of a difference between me having lived in a large city for the last 7 years of my life and you know, a smaller town where maybe people congregate more, you know, like the people that are in your life are more important, or going to the bar is a more important thing, you know, like that's your, that's where you go to hang out, you know?
Yeah. Going to your bar.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, like somebody like Joe who gets his coffee at the bar, you know, like that type of person, you know, but the thing that, plays especially odd about, what we've now been talking about for a hilarious amount of time, is that they're all watching this news probably at night, you know, like many probably, or not quite, but maybe as much as like 12 hours after it actually happened. Then we have to go back to the sort of the Tim thing where he's like, oh yeah, that was 9 hours ago. We're over it. You know?
Yeah. Cause so. Now we consume news this big as soon as possible. And that could be alone. That could be in the morning. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Cause it happens at 8:05. Right.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What do you think of the depiction of Small Town America in this?
I don't know. I don't feel like it tries to do too much with it. I think it's just sort of, I mean, the town is just so empty. You know? I don't know. I guess I don't have thoughts. You know, I'm stumbling because I don't have thoughts. Do you have anything?
No, not so much. I just, Oscar, we don't see much of Gloria's life in New York. It sounds like a fun time, but we don't get to see too much of it. I do love her first scene, though, when she's her, like, quarter-hearted apology.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we've got Tim, who is seemingly pretty cultured in that he has a British accent. And
They had to get the Downton Abbey people into the theater. That's
yeah,
Downton,
that's right.
Sorry, guys.
No, but I mean, he seems white collar, you know, he's got a pretty big apartment for New York, so he seems to be doing pretty well. And he dresses well. And then we have that compared to Oscar, who's, you know, got the flannel and drives a pickup truck and, you know, some of the traditional signifiers of a small town.
Yeah, that is true. Not that those people don't exist in cities, but you are right that that is sort of the way that this movie characterizes the city versus small town. Yeah.
Tim has meetings and clients, and Oscar has people who go to his bar.
Yeah, exactly. Meetings of a different sort.
Yeah,
I think we see Tim drinking tea at one point. Another sign of a metropolitan gentleman. even though he's carrying an empty thermos, I think there's a tea bag sticking out of it. I hate it when people. Have you ever noticed this, where people are just supposed to be holding a drink, and it's so clearly so obvious that there is nothing in there. It could be a glass. It could, well, I guess it wouldn't be a glass because I would see it, but like a thermos or a coffee mug. It just drives me crazy because the physics of holding an empty thing are totally different than holding something with liquid in it. And I know why they do it. It's for continuity, but especially in a closed thermos, it makes no sense. Just put water in it, give it some weight. Anyway, moving on.
No, that actually, because you brought up tea, this will segue well to something I want to ask you. And it was, it's a small moment, but what about, what's his name? Not Joel, not Oscar.
Tim Blake Nelson.
Yeah, there it is. Tim Blake Nelson. the junkie.
Three first names. Sorry.
Yikes. What do you make of his little teabag story?
Is that the story, like the astronaut and then he lights it on fire?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have thoughts. Do you make anything of it?
Yeah, I thought it might just be a really small version of kind of what this movie is. You know, Oscar says that would have been cooler with a story, and it's just the way that to look at the blending of the genres in this, you know, is, would a sci-fi movie be cooler with a, you know, a monster sci-fi movie, whatever, be cooler with this emotional angle, this sort of dramedy coming of age thing, or to look at it the other way, is just this coming hometown kind of story made more interesting by the more obvious spectacular movie, like a monster movie, like a disaster movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's an interesting point. I think it does kind of describe the movie as as you have explained. Yeah, you're not wrong.
Good.
Yeah.
I hate being wrong.
But I love telling you you're wrong.
I know that.
Yeah.
Did you put any thought into why Gloria's the monster and why Oscar's the robot when we finally do get to see Oscar as the robot?
The very brief reading I have of it is that Oscar is more representing how I feel about modern technology, whereas Gloria is closer to a human that I would want to be, like a living thing that I would want to know, as opposed, where Oscar sort of reminds me of a human representation of the internet. So he's more of a robotic type of character, despite the fact that, you know, he's played by a human who is not a robotic performer.
That's true. Yeah. Okay.
That's my hot take on that.
Well, good, because I didn't have a take on that at all. I just wondered why it wasn't just another, you know, slightly different monster. But as I said, you were looking at this through a different lens than I was. So I'm glad that that makes a lot of sense to me. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You're not wrong.
Oh, so kind. I can't wait for this movie, or this podcast, to take a dark turn when one of us starts physically abusing the other. It's gonna get weird.
Let's do Fight Club again.
Yeah, but let's do it. Let's record that one when we're both in the same room.
In the same room, yeah. But then the security footage only shows one person in the room.
Whoa! So what do you make of... also, do we know what happens to Gloria's parents? What has happened to them? Like, are they dead? Why is that home totally empty?
My understanding, and I don't know if this was totally in the movie, because I remember she gives an explanation, but she lies a lot. Like, yeah. You know, like she lies about why she's back and all that kind of stuff too, right?
Yeah.
So I took that with a grain of salt. I think they said she went to go live down south. Like, I know this town is never named, but I think of it as somewhere in upstate New York.
Yeah, so do I.
And nothing about it ruins that theory for me, so that's what I'm going with. And just the fact that... Tim is there and it's not completely crazy. You know, it seems odd that he's this far out of New York City, but it's not like it's California or something.
Yeah, yeah. But he also does have to fly there, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
So I guess that complicates things a little bit.
Yeah, so I just thought it was upstate New York or somewhere in New York State, and that her parents are either vacationing or have retired to somewhere warmer in the south, and they just have this house. Yeah. Now, does that explain why it's so empty and why they wouldn't lock it or have someone check up on it, you know, Because it is kind of more run down than you think anybody who can afford a second house would let their first house go to.
Yeah, but, and like the floors are covered in dust, like layers of dust when Gloria gets there.
Yeah, so I... And did they sell off all the furniture or bring it with them to mm-hmm. Florida? I don't know. But that's my guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, because that's one of the things that I never found an answer for in this movie. And I will say I like this movie a lot, and some of the things that I like about this movie are, I think, very much intended. But there are, I feel like the movie doesn't put a button on anything other than the technology aspects of things. You know, like I feel like I have no recommendations for what could have been done or suggestions for what could have been done. But I feel like this movie's a 7.5 that easily could have been a 9. You know, just a couple slight changes, and I couldn't even tell you what they are, but there is just sort of a feeling of things not quite coming together, despite the fact that I find the ideas very interesting. And one of those things that I couldn't quite figure out was a reading on Oscar giving Gloria all of this furniture. Does he just want her to sort of owe him something? Is that sort of the idea? Because I understand why she doesn't sleep on the futon towards the end when she rolls up in the deflated air mattress, which is a fantastic shot.
Why does she do that?
Because she doesn't. Him. Yeah, exactly. That's right after he has hit her in the face, and he just, or she just doesn't want. She doesn't want anything to do with Oscar, and she. To do so, she has to ignore pretty much everything in her house except for the one thing that she brought in there before she ran into Oscar.
Yeah, I mean, this ties in, I think, with what to me was the more obvious reading of this movie. But as I said, I like what you've seen in it, and it actually fills in a lot of things that were either contradictory or meaningless in the way that I looked at it. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be like the, you know, it's this is... pretty plainly spelled out, as I said, for some things, but it's like the like battered wife or just a domestic abuse victim's story. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if you want to start with the furniture and the stuff that Oscar provides Gloria, it's, you know, about having a partner who does things for you, you know, and he is obviously not a good person, and overall he doesn't treat you well, but just being in this relationship does have some upsides. You know, you have a place to stay. You know, in this one she has her own house, but he provides her with some of the comforts. You know, he gets her this big screen TV, he gets her a futon to sleep on, he gets her a job, and even though she's working, he's the breadwinner. We assume he makes more money than her, but he's also providing her with the money that she does earn just by being her employer. And to me, it just seems like the abusive husband, and she's, you know, has these comforts of life that she would not have on her own, and none of it seems to be glorious. You know, it's very much her playing, or sort of her punching below her weight class, right? Tim is saying, you know, you're not a waitress, you're a writer. You know, she seems to be the smart person who kind of made one mistake working at this internet company, and now is kind of sunk back. It's as though this moving to the big city and doing all these things didn't work out for her, and now she's very much taking a step backwards in life. She goes back to her small town. She has a job that seemingly doesn't really challenge her. It's not to say that anyone who's a waitress isn't doing anything with their life, but, you know, she's sort of shown to have this other strength that is not being really utilized at all. She's drinking a lot. You know, she was drinking in the city too, but this one it seems to be more accepted. She's found this husband who doesn't really expect her to do a lot, not to be anything more, not to really push herself to be anything more than she is, and to be content to take the step backward in life and be extremely comfortable. And, you know, it's played out very plainly at some points. He hits her, you know, there's an actual physical abuse that's depicted and some very uncomfortable scenes in this movie that I think are uncomfortable for the right reasons. And even just the fact at the climax that she has the black eye, which is, I think, the most classic coding of the battered wife. You know, that goes so far back in jokes and in comics and in more serious depictions of domestic abuse. And I think that's the big one for me. As I said, I do like a lot of the stuff you saw in it, but I think that is the most present one to me in my viewing of it. Was that reading's there for you though, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, I mean that's where I see so much of it. And I think that the monster in this is a manifestation of her regression, you know, it even to the point that it shows up when she goes to the park that she used to go to as a child. Mm-hmm. It's very much this step back. She's acting immaturely. She's drinking all night when she's well aware she should be drinking less. As I said, she's back in her hometown. She's literally in her childhood house. She's seeing the kids walk to school the way that she walked to school. Mm-hmm. And in the flashback, we see, you know, how this monster came to be. But as we're kind of talking about the genre of this movie, we don't really care about it's not that we don't care, but we're not so focused on how this monster is going to be taken down as much as we hope that Gloria is going to sort of hold her end of the bargain that she makes with herself. You know, when she realizes she needs to drink less, she realizes she needs to be more responsible. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're hoping for. We hope that she is strong enough to ask more of herself and to get out of this clearly unhealthy relationship that she has with Oscar.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that is all pretty present in the movie.
Yeah. Why does she go to Seoul in the end to you instead of just going with Tim?
Because that's something, that's the way that she can, she's making a greater change by going with, by helping a lot of other people. And also she knows that there's this, like, also as a seemingly, like, at least mildly moral person, she knows that she is, like, the one person in the world that actually knows what's happening and is the only person that could maybe potentially stop it if this idea of going to Seoul for the right time works, you know? I think she feels an obligation because she knows if she goes with Tim, then Oscar just keeps going to the playground and stomping around. But, you know, by going to Seoul, she can actually sort of make a bigger change in life as opposed to just sort of regressing into another part of her life that may or may not have been healthy, you know?
Yeah, I
because I think the way that the reason I think that is because of the conversation she has with Tim when he says something along the line when she's in Korea and she calls him, he says, you know, you owe me an explanation, and she's like, what? No. And like which one is a great great moment of performance. Anne Hathaway is good all throughout this movie, but that is a really good moment because just in most of those conversations, you kind of, in movies, you're kind of like, yeah, and then that leads into an apology. But what
and
she says...
They kiss and have happily ever after.
Yeah, exactly. They make out with their iPhones.
But that's not what we want in the movie.
But, you know, and what she ends up saying is she makes really good points that she's right about. And, you know, I wouldn't have considered before that scene, even if you had described what is going to happen, I would have assumed that it's just like, yeah, there's a little apology. I went to Seoul to fight a monster. but you know, movies have conditioned us to sort of assume that an apology in some capacity is coming. And then what she says is absolutely right. Like, he broke up with her and packed up her things and basically kicked her out of his apartment, of the place that she had been living with, you know, no real notice. And that was all a decision he made, and she doesn't owe him anything because of that. So that's something I really enjoy. And I think that sort of ties into why she doesn't go with Tim, because she realizes that she doesn't want to be back in her hometown, but she also doesn't want the life she had before too. You know, there's more growth to be had. And I just don't think either of these cities work as options for her. And to be on the path to the life that she most wants to lead, she feels compelled to at least help the people that are going to get stomped on by Oscar.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes
it's the
sense.
Most different. It's the most different option she could possibly come up with. It is literally her fighting a monster. You know, using some weird sort of geographical continuum to fight a monster on a playground while in Seoul. You know, or a monster on a New York playground or wherever it is while in Seoul.
Yeah, it's different than the rom-com of picking guy A or guy B. It's secret option C, fly to South Korea.
Exactly. Well, and also, like, just imagine how, well, one, this podcast wouldn't have existed. We just wouldn't be doing this episode if she goes with Tim. I can't imagine, because I can't see an interesting conclusion out of that. And if we did do this podcast, it would be me being furious that she ends up back with the guy that threw her out of her house. You know, like, it's way more interesting that on a movie about self-discovery that she remains alone at the end of the movie, more or less. You know, she's just she's talking to somebody, but it's a new character. You know, she is walking alone, still trying to figure herself out, because once she disposes of this one monster, she still realizes there's the monster within her that has to she has to muster up the strength to keep down and turn down a drink, and she doesn't know that she can do that.
yeah, exactly. And that's that kind of goes with what I was getting at before as well. I think that's, we're on the same page with this. I think it's telling that the place is called Seoul. I mean, I know that there is a place called Seoul, but in fitting in back with this this being about her childhood and where it came, where she comes from, in this non-negative way, you know, not regression in a negative way of, you know, devolving, but just looking backwards and where she came from, I think there's something about, you know, who she is and where she came from, and that comes into play. You know, it's like her soul, it's Seoul, South Korea, whatever. And as you said, there's this very literal monster that has to be battled, but then there's this you know, more metaphorical one that she fights within herself. And yeah, I mean, this sounds a little bit like the rom-coms that we were talking about, that we wouldn't want this movie to be, but I think it does it in an interesting way, that it's about fixing herself first before she can move on to somebody else, right? It's, this growth isn't just moving from relationship from man to man in order for her to become, you know, self-actualized. She needs to fix things up for herself and be able to move on from there. And so that's what I mean, kind of moving backwards and fixing the things that you don't like about yourself, and then being able to, you know, maybe there is a way that she does end up with Tim, but I think you and I both like this movie better that a female character growth isn't just ending up with the nicer guy. It's about ending up alone, but in a happy alone that you could, you know, move on to something else after, once you're happy with who you are as a person, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I remember one of the things I liked about this movie when I first saw it was that I never felt like she was going to go back to Tim at any point in the movie. And also that, you know, you kind of, just in the way that we've been conditioned to watch movies about attractive female lead and attractive male lead that are around the same age, or the female being slightly younger than, or slightly or much younger than the male lead, which is not the case in this movie, but just the way that we were conditioned is that we kind of expect them to have some sort of relationship, you know, emotional, physical relationship, whatever. And you know, by I don't know, the 45 minute part mark of this movie, it becomes pretty clear that's not going to happen with Oscar, and I like that a lot. It's another sort of thing that, where you're, another sort of convention that you're toying with, just like it was toying with the convention of the monster movies throughout, is that I just like watching a movie expecting something to happen and then that thing not happening, you know? I never even thought we'd see Tim again after the first scene of the movie. I didn't see him coming to this small town to come and get, quote unquote, come and get Gloria, or try to persuade her to come back with her. I think the way that the movie feels totally so wholly about Anne Hathaway's character Gloria trying to figure herself out, I think is impressive on its own. Yeah,
yeah. And even when she's picked up that picked up Oscar in that final scene in Seoul. As I said, she's still gonna get the black eye, which is a signifier, a very powerful signifier. And, you know, she kind of has her "I am woman, hear me roar" moment too, right? You know, she lets out a roar seemingly as she throws him away. And yeah, I think that it's great that the ending isn't she's done so well that she gets the good guy back. It's she's on her own. And I mean, do you think she takes the drink in Korea?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I think just the way that she sighs, I think is simultaneously like, I want this and don't want this, but I know that I will have this, you know?
Yeah. And so do you think that it's still, an optimistic end that, you know, she's gotten rid of Oscar. You know, we think it's pretty safe to say that that's not coming back. Tim, I think, is up in the air. You seem less likely about that, but I don't think that's an important distinction. And even just sighing, even if she does take the drink, she knows that she's not and that she's working towards, or at least trying to work towards, getting clean.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a positive conclusion. I think she gets drunk that night, but I don't think
She had a big day.
She did have a very big day. Maybe she only gets two drinks in and just passes out because she flew to Korea.
Fuck it, she's on vacation. Let her have a few. But
she drinks that night. But I think the idea is that like maybe 80 nights from now she doesn't. You know?
Yeah.
And that's that's growth. You know, like one step at a time. You know, kill the monster and then kill your alcoholism, or at least find a way to make it subside.
Yeah, and I think that just like the emotional stuff with this movie, it's not this very Hollywood cliche ending that all of a sudden everything's better, but things are heading in the right way and there's still a struggle to be had, but she's a smarter, better person for accepting that and working her way towards it.
Yeah, absolutely. And even, you know, now that she's on the exact opposite side of the world, the thing, one of the things that is a big problem in her life still exists there, you know, like alcohol is just so present in culture that, you know, it's like you can go anywhere in the world and find a drink, or anywhere, any city, and find a drink, you know, and she'll never be able to totally run away from that. So she's got to conquer it in some capacity.
I like it.
I like this movie too, and we somehow went the whole podcast without saying the writer director's name, so I'm gonna say that real quickly. Nacho Vigalondo.
That's true.
Yeah, and I just think this is such a creative movie and such an enjoyable movie, and you know, there's severe budget constraints for this movie, and especially for the type of movie that is being made. You know, there just wasn't a lot of money to go around for the smashy part of the things of the film. But I just sort of think like I think that it is cool the way that this movie was directed. I think one of the things that we haven't talked about is the way that they somehow make a monster scene out of Oscar and Gloria fighting on the playground, like that scene where he pushes her over and they use the sounds of an actual monster attack, but they can just shoot it on the cheap and it's still like mildly horrifying, you know, because you can sort of, you know, enough by now to know what they are doing. And and I just think the way that they sort of get around not having money in this movie is creative a lot of the time.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Yeah. So thank you for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check back next week when we'll be talking about something else.